You're listening to the DJMblog.com podcast number 2 on November 5th, 2010. So welcome to the show, our excellent and wonderful and beautiful guest, Jessica McKeown.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, so it's so great to have you as a first guest on the podcast. We talked about some of the stuff that's interesting right now, but what do we want to talk about first?
Well, I was just playing Angry Birds, and I think a lot of people were talking about it from the guys at work being like, oh my god, I can't believe you're not on that level yet. It's so easy, you know, here, let me see it. To people talking about Angry Bird costumes for Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
It's a pretty popular app, and I think it does a good job of using the physics of the iPhone or the iPod Touch.
Yeah.
And letting you really kind of get a feel for it. It's a really simple game. It gets harder and harder. The more you get into it. But they just released a Halloween version, which I think you downloaded, right?
Yeah, for sure. And actually, because I had I had been playing level 4 of Angry Birds Halloween, and it was so hard. It took me so many tries. I was so stuck on it, but I love the game. It's the touches are with graphics and sounds are really nice, and it's just a really clever, fun game. Does make me think when I see the birds get flung up there, they follow a sort of a projectile path, and that's the last thing any bird would ever do, right? As proud parakeet owners, we know that even when if they have their wings clipped or if they're really juvenile, they're still gonna make every attempt to flap around. They're gonna fight the normal laws of projectile physics pretty hard, right? But no, it's a really fun game. It's obviously not realistic. It's just, like you said, it's clever. It's a touchscreen game. People are talking about how, you know, it might move to other, you know, platforms, but it's going to be hard to replicate the same experience where you're interacting with the touchscreen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if people would really even want to see it on, like, a gaming console, per se.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that's probably what is good about the Angry Birds is it's a great, fun time killer. If you want to just mess around for a little bit, it's what they call casual gaming, I guess. You can jump in, jump out, anyone can play. You don't have to be a gamer. And I think with the release of the Halloween edition, they're starting to use some really good marketing strategies because they've got a really big base, and what they're doing now is they're getting more money out of their base. So people have already paid 99 cents for the Angry Birds, and they might not have even finished the whole level, but something new's out, it's timely, it's only 99 cents again, it's, you know, you want to have it, so you can get another dollar out of your consumers by doing something like that.
It's such an interesting model for mobile gaming, because I know that Nintendo Game Boy and its evolution. I guess the DS is the popular one right now, and I guess they're gonna come. They're always coming out with new ones. That has really, you know, been pretty popular in mobile gaming. And I have my PSP, and I know that it has some following. But this, like you said, they take that casual approach, whereas like PSP are just small PlayStation games. You know, just able to play on a smaller screen, you know, in your hand, right? But they really kind of take the same style. They're reduced in size a little, but they basically have the same kind of ambition and the same kind of game design as a regular PlayStation game. And this is a new model where they're much less expensive. Do you think that it's possible for the mid-market producers to make enough money on these $1 and $2 you know, per game models? Angry Birds obviously is doing so much volume, they're going to be doing well. The Rovio and then the, you know, the people behind Angry Birds. But, you know, what do you think? What's your feeling about how big is the market going to be for people that are actually going to be able to make money on these apps?
Well, I think there's a couple different parts to your market, you know. Ingenuity is one of them. So that Fruit Ninja game that Jim and I can play.
Yeah.
Jim lives in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
He's my brother-in-law, Dan's brother. And he can challenge me to a game, and I can be in Cleveland. So right there we have wireless gaming, and potentially this could happen all over the world. So there's something to that effect. There's definitely a word of mouth, a spreading of it. You know, if
mm-hmm.
it's a game that you can play with others, now I'm going to tell somebody about Fruit Ninja, because now that I've paid $1 for it, I want to have other people to play with.
So it
uses that social networking aspect to sort of grow the base.
Yeah, and it already has a bigger base, it seems, because I own a PSP. You did have a Game Boy Advance, but you haven't had a PSP, and you haven't had or a DS, so like the latest generation of either of those. Like, you know, you don't mind those games, but you never saw a compelling reason to go and get one of those games, right? I mean, basically, whereas on the phone, you've got an iPhone, you use it to make calls, look up information on the web, check your different, you know, services, you know, that are out there. Like, so I guess, you know, then you're like, oh, maybe there's a little niche in my day for a game, and maybe, you know, I have, you know, I'll spend a buck or two on it, but, you know, it's not like a big investment in money, but even more importantly for a lot of people, you know, including you, I think, time, you know, and so that's, they're really finding a broader market, right? So I guess there is that. There's definitely a wider range of people looking at it. But going back to these smaller platforms, I did see this rumor of a PSP 2, and I was wondering what you thought of this mock-up that they had on Engadget.com. It's supposed to have a slide-out screen and maybe two little analog sticks there, you know, for freestyle controls.
It looks really nice. I think, I don't know how big the screen is, but if it's going to be a decent size, they should, and I mean by they, I mean Sony, should really work in apps to get Netflix and Hulu and other things on there, because I think more and more, you know, your pocket space, so to speak, is limited, and we really are searching for that one device that does it all. One of the tips I just gave out to my friend Kim today is that you can use your iPhone camera as a mirror. So you hold it up and you, instead of the camera facing away from you, you can swap it and turn it towards you so it can see you, so you can put on your lipstick. You don't need a mirror anymore. You know, there's so many great things that you can do, and I think more and more, you know, we are looking for that do-it-all device. Now, if you're a serious gamer, you know, then you're definitely going to want a PSP, because you're not going to get the graphics and you're not going to get the effect for like a fighting game or a, you know, a button mash or something that you're really doing in with an iPod Touch. I mean, just, I think gamers are probably so used to that control stick, and you know, you push it up to the left just slightly, and it's all about touch and driving. And I mean, I also think that, you know, that's more of like a portable gaming. Like, maybe you want to be in different places within your house or out and you're traveling and you want to play your game. Whereas the games on the iPhone and the iPod Touch are, I think, like really fun time killers.
Yeah, and it's interesting how the iPad, like you say, might be somewhere in between those, because it might be mainly around the house, but it might be like a personal gaming platform for people. I know that's already developing some niche. Then there's this other rumor about a PSP phone that, you know, and that's, that mock-up looks different, and I don't know if this is, you know, true either, but that has two little, like, smaller, kind of more like sense pads, and the other one looks like it has analog sticks. But either way, it has a right one also, and that's very important, because that was one problem with the original PSP. Even that analog stick not being great on the left, at least it was there, and there was none on the right. It, you know, definitely limited the ability to make it, to use some tools. But like, I totally agree with what you said before about wanting certain games on different platforms. The PSP definitely going to be better for games like Madden for the foreseeable future than a touchscreen, just because of the way those were designed through the controller you know, metaphor, and maybe that's better for it, maybe it's not, but those have evolved, that's the way it's evolved, so for sure. But I don't know. I mean, yeah, that leads us to Android too. I did want to say that because it looks like, you know, there's a rumor that Sony is going to make a PSP phone and it's going to run Android 3.0. So what do you? I mean, you know what I mean? Like that. Just what do you think about Android there, or just in general? I have a sense that it maybe is catching on enormously in the geek community, and then there's also that group of people that just want a decent phone, and they basically just buy, you know, an HTC Evo, or they buy, you know, a Droid because that's a nice phone they have in the store when they get it, and you know, but I don't know. I think there's kind of a dual kind of group, but those geeks think that maybe Android is really get bigger than they have. Maybe they're developing an inflated sense.
Well,
of how big it is, how important it is, because the people that are going to buy apps and use the platform a lot, browse the web a lot, maybe are iOS people in the middle of the tech, you know, like the techie kind of world, like the more mainstream, whereas they're out on the edge with Android, and then there's some entry-level people with Android because, you know, it can be made affordable too.
I think it's a mix of anti-Apple and...
Okay.
You know, as much as, you know, we have iPhones and we have this huge iMac, you know, we're aware of how Apple is not the little company that started in a garage anymore.
Oh, no.
They are
a
powerhouse. They're dominant. And when you get to that place, you lock people out and you shut them out. And I think Droid is at least opening up to the developer community and somewhat embracing it.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting platform. I think there's some what people are calling like splintering or stuff going on, where there's the Google app marketplace and the Amazon app marketplace, and maybe there's a Verizon one. I think soon or already all three of those have a different app store, and it can get like a lot of Android power users root their phone, which is really very similar to jailbreaking your iPhone. I don't know. It's an interesting market. We'll have to see how it evolves. I do think it's obviously a power. It's obviously important. I'm just wondering if, you know, for every geek that's going to buy apps, hack the phone, do a lot with it, there's several buyers probably of Android, and they're selling a lot of handsets. You know, there's several buyers that are just, you know, people that are upgrading their cell phone. They want, they're going to take one that looks good, and you know, that's pretty much that. They're mainly going to maybe make texts and calls with it. They may not, at least right away, become, you know, the power users. I don't know. The different app stores and stuff, it is going to be a little more confusing than what Apple offers people. And like you said, they're not a very small company anymore. There is a lot of negativity. It's like, look, you know, I'm fine. We run a Linux box. We have, you know, a couple of Apples. Like, it's not a big deal, like, what we use, really. We just want to do stuff, you know. And Apple, you know, allows us to edit video and, you know, do a lot of stuff that is, you know, where it's the top platform for that. And we have interest in, you know, Aperture is on Apple. You know, we want to process our photos. We're passionate about that stuff. So, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong. You know, people really get down on Apple, though.
Well, it's very expensive.
They're pricey.
And they're very elitist and very exclusive. So, especially with the phone, the reason why a lot of people are buying Droids is because they don't or can't switch to AT&T. And
yeah.
From my experience with AT&T, which was so far has been absolutely 100% horrible.
The customer service, you're right.
I heard from many people, I really want the iPhone, but I don't want to go to AT&T.
Sure.
So I'm hoping that the Droid market can grow and really push Apple to open up to more carriers.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of rumors.
Yeah.
You know,
always
Verizon
the rumors.
And
always
and
those rumors.
And I think we've been hearing them for 4 years now.
It's been a while.
So it's just, you know, it's just worth it to know that part of the popularity of Droid is because of the exclusivity of the Apple. and the Apple products.
And reaction. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, because, and not a lot of people maybe even know this when they're buying their Android phone, but Android is based on a Linux kernel. Now, it doesn't use a lot of the tools that make up the what people think of when they think of Linux desktop, because it doesn't use the GNU tools, but it for the most part, but it uses you know, it uses the Linux kernel, and actually, I don't know, like, okay, so that is not much to do with the also running Linux kernel is the PC we have in the corner, you know, it's and I've been running Linux Mint on it.
Yeah, we put our PCs in the corner.
Yeah, no, it's I'm not even, I guess I that's not even a term I'm supposed to use, but I think like a PC is just a personal computer that, you know, this, it has no, well, all right, I'll admit it. Yeah, it did have Windows on it, and it doesn't have, it has no Windows on it anymore. It just has free, you know, software on it, but I put Linux Mint on it because I wanted to try something different. Ubuntu 10.10 wasn't significantly different than 10.04, and I've been very impressed with Linux Mint 10 so far. I think I'm still running the release candidate, but I'm sorry, did I? Did you, what did you think of the Linux Mint when you use it just very briefly? The interface, do you think that it looks like a pretty nice interface?
Yeah.
I mean,
I think it's weird that they want to make it like Apple, but.
Do you think Linux Mint is trying to look like Apple? Or Ubuntu? Do you think Ubuntu is the one that's trying? Oh, okay. No, I totally get what you're saying, because we were running Ubuntu for a while, and that, because they have the, they put the bar at the top with a lot of the same kinds of, you know, menu stylings as Apple.
What
they're
was
totally
the one
moving
that that you showed me, though, that was almost exactly like Apple?
Oh, that was when I was running Ubuntu 10.04, and then I ran a few packages on it that made it appear like OS 10. It built a dock, and then it skinned that dock with some, you know, some tools. It was pretty impressive. So I guess like we could probably convince someone that came over that was a Hackintosh, but I don't really know what the point of convincing that. They probably wouldn't even know what we were talking about. So
they probably think that you just put Apple software on a PC.
Yeah, but right, and it was strange when I had that set up. So I was like, okay, I'm going to try something, you know, different. I upgraded to the new Ubuntu, and it really isn't that different. And then the next Ubuntu after this, they're going to put that new launcher in. That's strange, that Unity launcher. So I might be a Linux Mint user now. So, okay, so we talked about the technology stuff. I do like BlendCam. We were talking about apps. I just want to say for iOS, free BlendCam, it's kind of fun. Like, it took Halloween pictures and stuff with it. They had multiple exposure kind of tools. It's cool, and that one's free. Angry Birds Halloween is, I think it's $1, you know, and that's a good app. But BlendCam, you know, free. And also, if you like Posterous, they have a free app where you can now post text along with photos. It's nice.
Yeah, and I've been using Instagram. It's like a mini photo social network. So you can take photos, and then you can add filters to it so you can make it look like a 70s photo. There's slight, you know, variations of the photo, nothing too dramatic. But then you can see what's popular, and as you build a network of friends, you can share them and comment on them. So all within the phone, you know, maybe you only want to share with certain people.
Mm-hmm.
One of my tech friends commented like, oh, you know, I'll be proud to say that I knew Instagram when it only had 400,000 users. I don't know that it's necessarily going to take off, but I think it might with like the Flickr crowd.
It might be a niche. Like Flickr grew enormously, but then sometime a few years ago, it seemed to kind of cap off because there's maybe a certain group of people it was going to get to, and then it might be like that. Well, that's interesting, though. I'm going to have to learn more about that. I'm not too familiar with that. Very cool. Yeah, I definitely feel like there's a lot of apps. You know, we hear about jailbreaking and stuff, but I feel like, you know, I just, you know, having just gotten the iPhone 4, like, there's so many things on it that I want to check out, and You know, I mean, I guess, you know, maybe I'll jailbreak in the future. Jim was telling me about some music stuff, actually, and that's what I was going to go talk about next, unless you had another app.
Let's look. Let's see if there's anything. I really do like Fruit Ninja. I think that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was one that was recommended. Yeah.
I definitely recommend that. Nothing that's really jumping out at me right now that I've been playing with a lot. And the Netflix app. I think that's really awesome. The fact that you can watch your Netflix movies on your phone. One of the girls I work with, she is a new mom, so she has to breastfeed. And I guess she has to pump her milk while she's at work.
Oh.
And so she goes into this room, and it takes half an hour. And
okay.
So she catches up on her shows on her phone while she's waiting.
Everybody wins.
Right. So, I mean, I know it's funny to talk about that, but if you have half an hour or you want to take some, you know, break on lunch, you can do that.
It's yeah.
Really quite, it's really quite nice. I mean, they are really
cool.
Getting to the idea of content everywhere. I think that's a big expectation, you know. And I think one of my biggest issues is if I buy iTunes, you know, speaking about music, if I buy it on this computer, I can't go and listen to it on my computer at work. You know, like, I feel like they need to offer like a cloud network where you can access your iTunes wherever you are.
You know, there have been a lot of rumors about that, and as far as I know, they even have had an acquisition or two, maybe that were of companies that were in that general area. I'm not too familiar with the details, but I have heard that, like, that, you know, there's definitely a lot of talk about that, and I do think some kind of competitors, sort of competitors like the Ubuntu One music store, I think is offering that kind of cloud, you know, capability with music and syncing and stuff. Because that does sound like it makes sense. And people are talking about, you know, data center Apple's building and stuff. They're thinking that that might be on the way. Yeah, because they have home sharing. It's easy to get, you know, use your iPhone like a remote or go computer to computer, whatever that uses, Bluetooth or whatever. But yeah, that definitely could be coming along a lot further. You know, I don't even think it's really worth it. I was thinking about talking about Windows Phone 7 and Xbox Kinect, because Microsoft's obviously trying to really push two products that they're trying to make. They're trying to make these sound, you know, these they're trying to give these a very hip image, and they're really trying to push both of those. Windows Phone 7 being like their attempt to bring, you know, back their, you know, any relevance to their phone line, and it doesn't look very good. And I think Xbox Kinect looks just ridiculous and insane. Like, the commercials of people doing it looks so uncool. But I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about those?
They're definitely catch-up Me Too products.
Oh, because versus the iPhone and Android for the Windows Phone 7, and what do you think they're chasing? Almost definitely the Nintendo Wii with the Xbox Kinect, right? That makes sense. Okay, yeah. So we haven't really seen much about the Windows Phone, but what I've seen, I'm not really very, you know, it doesn't look very interesting. But what do you think about the Xbox Kinect in terms of have you seen any of the information? It's there's no controls. Have you seen any of the commercials for Xbox Kinect?
I haven't, but I think they're definitely trying to, again, expand their audience.
Yeah, because that's not your typical RPG playing Windows loving Xbox. Yeah, user. Those are okay. See, now that this is an official commercial, but I'm not sure.
So you have an Xbox, and then you have this Kinect.
It's basically just a camera or a series of cameras and sensors in front of you that allow your movements to be used as input into the gaming system.
So they're just, you know, they're just I mean, Sony did this. They had a camera, and, you know, looking at this commercial here, it's a lot of young people and kids and families, and they're just, they're going after another market. So if, you know, they're, I think when they, when Microsoft first started, what they really wanted to be was home entertainment. That's what they were going after. They wanted the Xbox to be a home entertainment device. So
sure.
Video games, music, movies, and I think the whole idea is, we can buy an Xbox, my 13-year-old son can play it, my 7-year-old daughter can play it, my husband and I can play it, you know, like, they're really trying to expand it.
Yeah, but, okay, but I mean, how many husbands are going to want to play this? Like, it doesn't, it just looks like, it's like these dancing games, and there's racing games you can't, there's no gas pedal, you can only steer. Like, think about the limitations of the controls. The kind of games that a lot of guys love, not all guys, you know, there's no reason to stereotype, but a lot of guys like the games where you're either playing sports or, like, I like those kinds of games, like, or like shooting games are really popular, or racing games.
But this isn't for gamers. This is for casual people. This is...
This is the we're back to casual gaming, really.
Is.
Okay.
Well,
that's an interesting idea.
I mean, maybe they've tapped out the hardcore gaming market, you know?
They may have.
And
close.
My feeling is, knowing what goes into making a video game, it's probably really easy to make casual games. Maybe a lot easier than developing a storyline and characters and the graphics and 10,000 different ways to fight. If you just put the person in there,
see,
and
the
roll
little
them
girl
around,
thinks she's a tiger. I mean, I don't know. That's amusing for little kids, but I can't see that being interesting for long. And no, now, you know, I don't see. When they flash the games on the screen, they don't look very compelling to me. Like, there's a lot of weird translucent characters that you watch and pretend is you. Like, it doesn't. And then there's some dancing games, and those just look terrible and ridiculous to me. But I know there's a market for dancing. I'm not sure there's a market for this, but like you said, it's gonna have to be crossover. There's a lot of people who are gonna have to buy the Kinect, which I don't know, $150, $200, something like that. And they're going to have to also buy the Xbox, right? Because a lot of the people they're going for, look, the right there's a commercial here, and they show women hanging out together, like, yeah, working out to some of these. Well, that's the other thing, is like, they're going to push the workout games on this, and maybe there's a niche for that. But I know a lot of people use those Wii Fit type games a lot already.
Again, me too, catch-up products.
Is that, you know, I mean, does it, right, and doesn't it look cartoonish like the Wii? Like, Xbox has always historically tried to compete with PlayStation for best graphics, you know, for realism. You know, well, I mean, I'm just saying, like, these games are taking a very different mentality. They're having no problem looking very cartoonish. And, I mean, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that type of games, but they're not, like, trying to look super, you know, realistic, like Xbox games try to compete for looking like real graphics.
No,
because
those are video games, and there's a whole stereotype and a whole set of assumptions about people who play video games,
okay,
and what video games are. And, you know, there's that whole nerdy, you know, Dungeons and Dragons,
yeah,
kind
sure
of thing. Nobody
it's
in that video was a gamer. Having known gamers, or
yes,
with gamers,
okay,
those are all too thin to be gamers.
Okay.
And they're
okay,
all too white to be gamers, you know? Like, they're just this one little set.
White, well, a lot of white people play video games.
But they're, what I'm saying is, like, you know, there's a lot of diversity in the video game world. And this is a very small set.
Okay.
It's not for gamers. It's
sure
for, I don't know who it's for.
Definitely a good...
Because you have to be a gamer to have an Xbox 360, so maybe they're trying to drive console sales as well as the, what is it called? The Kinect?
The Kinect, yeah. Well, that's exactly it. How much is that going to take, you know, make people pay out, you know, if they want to have the Kinect with the game? Like, let's say we go to, you know, Amazon and search Xbox with Kinect. It's gonna cost a lot. And Sony has a motion controller too, so that's also worth pointing out. It's a more conventional style, like, you know, motion controller. It looks like you can get Xbox 360 4 gig console with Kinect. So that's like the tiny, like no memory console. You can get that for $300. You can get the one with more memory for $400 with the Kinect, I guess.
So, I mean, they're hoping to push sales for Christmas.
Right, because that's probably about what the Xbox 360 cost when it originally came out. You know, some years later, you can get it with Kinect, and they're definitely trying to tie for Christmas. They're definitely trying to push that. Well, you know, it'll be interesting. I don't know if they're going to be successful or not. I it's kind of an interesting question, I guess. What's your analysis? Do you have any prediction, or is it just kind of up in the air, I guess, depending on what people feel like getting this Christmas?
I think what they've done is they've really kind of split off the branding. So, like, Xbox Live, that's really what they're going for, that hardcore game or that online gaming.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, and then they can have Xbox Kinect. The black console, it's a little unfriendly, but otherwise, okay.
The white one, I think, was just starting to look kind of dated in the era of all this, like, all those dark stuff from Sony and all this, like, metal stuff from Apple. The white started, and then they wanted, they have a kind of second generation of that console, the way Sony has a second generation PS3 out, this generation, they're trying to give a reputation for being more reliable. I don't know if that's, you know, if that's valid or not, but that original one, there was the infamous red ring of death that people, like, you know, those Xbox 360s would just fail left and right, I guess. Whereas, like, PlayStation 3, I mean, I shouldn't say anything, but those things, you know, seem pretty solid. I put a poster out. Did I show you that poster that I have for our band? Because, you know, Jessica and I have a band. It's called Neener. And, you know, we like to rock, you know. And I have a poster because it has the same stars as the album cover. Belle and Sparty are parakeets. And then Dodger are parakeet. He's on the back cover. But the poster has Belle and Sparty in one of these double exposed photos, I just want people, if they want to listen to our music, go to blogs.sf3am.com/Neener, NEENER. I would recommend checking our music out. It's 20 minutes, it's just about 20 minutes, it's an EP, and you get a range of different sounds as you go through. So a lot of it was inspired by our videos. That we started making music for our videos this year more. That was a pretty interesting experiment.
Mm-hmm. And now we have a keyboard.
We just got, yeah. Now we're moving our equipment up, getting better stuff. Got a nice synthesizer there. So. In terms of music, in terms of other people's music, I do really like the Whitmark Demos album I got from it's a new Bob Dylan record. It's the Whitmark Demos 1962 to 1964, and it's got a lot of the great early Bob Dylan classics as he demos them. And I mean, those are the early ones where you don't need the full band. I mean, if you're talking about Highway 61. Revisited, you might want that big backing band and all those great sounds layered together. But if you're talking about old school Bob Dylan, you know, in the few years previous to that, you're going to really enjoy hearing some of the renditions of these great songs and some other stuff that just never really quite made it much wider. I mean, there's him singing Mr. Tambourine Man, and then there's a song called Only a Hobo, and I there's people that are serious experts about Bob Dylan, and I'm just a big fan, but a lot of these I know never really saw much other light of day, it's quite excellent. I guess Jessica, you even had too much time to listen to that record, have you?
So, no, not at all.
Alright, well, I'll have to let you listen before we can ask you, huh? And then there's a new Corner Shop song. If you go to cornershop.com right now and give them your email address, I use forwarders, so I can give anyone email address. Like, anyway, I like their new song too. Corner Shop is still pretty cool. I just kind of just found their their 97 CD, and I was listening to Brimful of Asha and all that. And then, you know, I went to their site, because, you know, it actually has cornershop.com on the front of it, even though it was from 1997. All right, Jessica, you ready to give us some some drumming on the way out? Thanks for listening to the DJMblog.com podcast number 2. Go to the website, check it out, and also check out Jessica's website, jessica.sf3am.com.